You are on the call for the Smartest TeleSummit 2007 second day panel discussion on getting paid for your art. Before we go forward, I want to thank our sponsors. We have ArtSpan.com and ArtExchange.com, who have realized the value of putting together something for art careers and have jumped on the bandwagon. These companies provide website space for artists, and I encourage you to check them out and see if it's a good fit for your career path. Now, I just want to do a quick little introduction. Please bear with me. I introduced it yesterday. Oh, hang on. I'm going to hit star 5. Hold on. There we go. I forgot to mute us. Yesterday, I was talking about this expanding dimension of reality that artists are creating in our social fabric. And I was thinking about it in a sequence where artists years and years ago, 30, 40 years ago, were on the fringe, and they were the independent mavericks. And how they're moving now into what Molly Gordon calls the accidental entrepreneur, and how this necessitates the growth of consciousness for artists around business and marketing if they're going to fully realize the vision. But now I'm becoming aware of this expanding dimension that's moving all of that into the career dimension, where it means that we don't just address the business aspects, but we get a chance to expand and address all the other issues that go alongside our business demands. And these issues, I've noticed a lot of you have written in your vision questionnaires to me, and it goes around things such as talking about the fears that hold you back, the insecurities that get in the way, the doubts that you have about trying to market and creating a business, and the role that confidence plays in this. And I remember Ken Wilber. I don't know how many of you are familiar with him. He's a philosopher in Boulder, Colorado, who's quite remarkable. And he talks about expanding dimensions of reality, not as a linear phenomenon where we start somewhere and end up somewhere else, and then we sort of move out of, but rather as a nesting phenomenon where each dimension of reality is nested within the next expanding one so that we don't lose anything. We don't lose the maverick independent self because we decide to take hold of the business aspects and get our vision in the world. And we don't lose the necessity to work with business and marketing because we expand and start to address some larger issues. So with that thought in mind, I want to introduce this incredible panel today who is going to help us expand even more. I want to talk first about Allison Stanfield. She started college as a painting major and somehow ended up with an undergraduate and graduate degrees in art history. And for some reason, she got a twisted kick out of sitting in those dark rooms looking at slides. After spending 10 years working in art museums where nobody talks about art as commerce, Allison somehow ended up as an art marketing consultant. She's always been an artist advocate and felt that ignoring the business side of the art world was really messing up artists' career opportunities. These days, Allison spends most of her time in Golden, Colorado, office teaching artists how to be more savvy through the Art Marketing Action newsletter, her online classes, and her individual consultations available through her website, artbizcoach.com. And also, I just want to add my little two cents in here with this. She is one of the most extraordinary marketing people I've come across. If you really want to look at a role model for marketing, look at Allison. Our next guest today is Claudine. Hi, Claudine.
Hi.
Claudine is just, I have to tell you, working with you has just been so much fun. She's a nationally known collage artist. Her work has been chosen as fine art poster designs, featured in magazines, used on book cover artwork, published in rubber stamps, drink coaster, journals, magnets, and more. And someday, Claudine, you're going to have to tell me what the more is. In addition to creating her artwork full-time, Claudine teaches mixed media collage workshops, and that's what she's going to be working with us in this workshop in the U.S. and Canada. And she's written two books about her techniques, Collage Discovery Workshop and Collage Discovery Workshop Beyond the Unexpected. Mm-hmm. She's also produced two instructional DVD workshops. In 2004, she was a guest on the Carol Duvall Show on HGTV, demonstrating techniques from her book. And I just want to jump in here and say that one of the things that really startled me is I saw this return, and this actually number may be bigger now, Claudine, but she has sold over 35,000 copies of her books. And for an artist, that is a pretty stunning amount of books to sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been great. My first book has done really, really well, so that's been very exciting.
And we're just so glad to have you here. Welcome.
I'm excited to be here.
Jeffrey Gorman, how are you today?
Doing well.
All right, glad you're here. You know, Jeffrey studied at the Maryland Institute of Art and the Boston Museum School. Well, that's my backyard, Jeffrey.
Right.
And then he moved to New Mexico and worked for 10 years in the gallery world. So this man really knows from where he comes when he gives you information. He also became director of the Horwich Llewellyn Gallery and an executive director for the estate of Alan Hoser, a renowned Native American sculptor. And then 10 years ago, Gorman founded GG Plus A, a consulting and career development firm working with artists, museums, and art organizations in the U.S. and Europe. He's written articles on the business of art for Art Calendar, the Artist Magazine, and the Pastel Journal, and he's also an author, too, Artist Career Training, a comprehensive 12-month program and workbook for artists. He's given workshops and seminars for a variety of art organizations, including the Santa Fe Museum of Fine Arts, the Albuquerque Arts Alliance, Artisan Santa Fe Northern New Mexico Studio Tour Association, and the Collector's Guide in Albuquerque. He's also worked with Arts in the Mountains in Bend, Oregon, Art Materials Expo in Pasadena, California, and the Sedona Art Center in Sedona, Arizona. Welcome today. He is. Tell me your website, because I left it off my notes, Jeffrey.
My website for my business is artistcube.com.
That's right, artistcube.com. Thank you for coming today. I can't wait to hear what your answers to the questions are going to be.
Well, this is fun.
Alita, hello, my dear. How are you?
I'm just wonderful. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good today. Well, Alita is equal parts artist, educator, and entrepreneur. So she is perfect for addressing that nesting phenomenon that I talked about earlier. She's got a successful track record of creating and producing her own artwork, managing a studio gallery, and delivering entrepreneurial workshops. She now inspires fine artists to make a better living making art through the Artist Career Training Program. As director, she conducts personal consultations, professionally designed educational programs, and practical independent study projects. And I can tell you from experience, one thing I really want you to know about Alita is this woman is incredibly thorough. When she comes to you, she is standing on a bedrock of research and solid information, guaranteed. Alita, welcome.
Thank you.
And last, and one of my favorites, is Michael Woodward. Hi, Michael.
Hi, I am.
Michael is, I'm not sure if I'm right in saying this, but ever since our first interview with you in the VORP, and you told me that it sounded like you kind of began the whole concept of art licensing.
Well, it was in England where I lived and worked, and I ran a very big studio and photo library, and I took that concept into art licensing before anybody else did.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And then people said, what's art licensing? And so I said, well, it's similar to stock libraries, but you have to license it instead of buying work outright, and that's how it started back in the 70s.
Yeah, I just, you know, my jaw kind of dropped open when you told me that, because it's not often, you know, we start to take things for granted as they become part of the cultural fabric, and you don't often think of where they began or who might have started them. So that was so great. So Michael's art licensing company was one of the first in Europe, and he licensed over $600 million in retail products for 22 years. And he represented artists, illustrators, and photographers working with national and international manufacturers and publishers. We're having a little interesting trouble on the line. I'm going to stop for a second. Is anybody noticing that?
Yes.
Yeah.
A little.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone have any idea if it might be coming from their end? Or nope, it stopped. It went away. Oh, that's magic. Nope, there it's back. I'm not sure what that interference is, folks. And I apologize for that. Michael's licensing
outside.
Excuse me?
It sounds like outside, like wind or something.
Yeah.
Well, there's this clicking, too, like people are trying to mute and unmute, even though I've muted everybody. You know what I'm going to do? Let me try unmuting and muting us back again and see if that does something. Hold on. Okay. Now, am I... some artists out there, just try to say something. Let me see if I went the wrong direction.
It sounds better.
Okay, but now I can hear you, which is not the way it's supposed to go.
Oh, no, I'm Claudine.
Oh, Claudine, okay. So, artist on the line, I'm not hearing you, so that means I must have unmuted in reverse. Oh, my goodness. Okay, here we go. Michael has a fantastic book called Licensing Art 101, and it is the handbook on art licensing for artists. He also has a vast experience in many aspects of licensing, from character merchandise and animation to fine art publishing in limited gallery editions, as well as mass marketing via high street retailers. So welcome, Michael. I can't wait for your expertise today.
Well,
so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to just briefly go over. It's exactly like we did yesterday. We're going to start with a question of the day, and each panel member will get to respond to that in sequence. And then we're going to do the two-minute challenge, where we have individual questions for each one of you. And then we're going to end up with a hot seat with one artist's story and the panel's response. And if we have time, we are going to do two stories today. And just for anybody who's joining us a little late, I want to remind you that you are on the call for the Smartest Telesummit 2002, Day 2, and the second panel discussion on getting paid for your art. Here's the question of the day, panelists. If there were just two actions that the artists listening today could take that you think would make the biggest difference in the sales of their artwork, what would you recommend? Allison, would you start off for us?
I would love to start off, and I'm so glad you asked me first, because I imagine that we're all going to say some similar things, because there are just basic things that all artists should be doing. And I'm going to start off with what I think is the most obvious one, the most obvious, the thing that will, I think, propel artists forward fastest is to use their mailing lists. The artist mailing list, and from a marketing standpoint, is their number one asset. And I think that artists, from my experience, don't take enough advantage of it. I hear all the time, well, I sent out this mailing to 1,500 people and I never heard anything. And one mailing will not do. You have to keep your name in front of people these days. We are bombarded constantly with advertising messages, and you've got to keep your name in front of people. And so use your mailing list. If you don't have one, start it, build it, cultivate it, nurture it. And because these the more people that you know, the more people you stay in touch with, the more people there are to buy your art. It's that simple. People buy art from people that they know and like.
Thanks, Allison. Yes, you're echoing yesterday. And I just have to say that I don't think there's any problem in repeating and having this, because I think some messages just really need to drop in at different points in the process. So thank you. That's great.
Huge. And then this, do you want me to do the second thing?
Yeah, please go.
The second thing that I think artists can do to propel their careers is to cozy up to technology. Learn how to use technology, because the basics are expected of you. You have to know how to resize a JPEG. You have to know how to attach it to an email. And, you know, these days you really would like to know how to start a blog and comment on a blog. You can't be afraid of technology these days. We're going ahead without you if you do.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thanks, Allison. Mm-hmm. That's great. Jeffrey, what have you got in this pod?
Well, I, you know, the list was so long, I had to narrow it down. I'm sure we're all going to, it's going to be a great
I did say two, Jeffrey, remember.
I know. So, just a little update with me. I have been showing my own work for about the last year and a half, and I am in six galleries around the United States. And I'll tell you, the first thing I learned for artists now, the first piece of advice I'm giving them, is to make their work as unique and as memorable as possible.
Mm.
I can't tell you how many clients I'm getting now, and the work is not memorable. I'm finding don't want to look at new work that's old work. So I'm really challenging my clients to dig deep and really push that artistic vision. Okay.
Jeffrey, I'm really glad to hear you say this, because so far nobody's really addressed this important piece.
It's happened with my own work, and this is the reason I know it is. I believe if we all have a fresh vision here, there's room for us all.
Mm.
And I'm seeing that really in the gallery world. You can nudge your way in there if everybody out there believes your vision is just a little different, and it doesn't have to be profoundly different. I usually say it's kind of the 5%. Basically make it 5%.
Don't scare yourself, in other words.
Exactly. Now, the second thing I'm finding, and again, it's from my own experience, is pricing. Pricing as a marketing strategy. Santa Fe, we're the second largest art market in the United States. I know quite a few gallery dealers. I spent time with them. Where I'm finding that artists' careers are getting bogged down is that when their prices get too high.
Mm.
Each artist has to dig down deep and figure out really what their expenses are. They have to work with materials that are competitively priced. They have to look at their bottom line. They have to figure out what they really need. And the pricing really, really, really has to be competitive. So,
and in order to figure that out, you have to look at how things are being priced, not by what's on the wall, but what is sold.
Exactly. And that's where it all starts. It's a marketplace. We can all talk about it till the cows come home. The marketplace is where all these prices are being set.
Exactly. Oh,
so,
that's great.
So have unique and memorable work and keep your prices really, really competitive.
Great, Jeffrey. Thank you. Fantastic. Those are just, I can't tell you how glad I am to hear you say those two things, because those two things are really high on my list.
Oh, good.
Great. Claudine, what do you have for us here?
Well, my tips will echo Allison's a little bit in that I am a big, big fan of the website. Like, as an artist now, you cannot not have a website. It's just unacceptable. You have to have a website that showcases your artwork, and not only just have a website, but make sure it's user-friendly, it's attractive to look at, things like that, very professional, so that it sets forth the message that you want to send out about your artwork. So website number one is my big thing. And for number two, I think that really not being afraid of doing your finances, learning about how to do your taxes, talk with your accountant, things like that. I do my taxes quarterly, and it took me a while to get used to doing all of that. And I think as artists, we're always afraid of those kind of things, but I think that being a professional artist, you have to start as you mean to go on. So you want to have a professional outlook for both your art and the way that you conduct your business.
And Claudine, that's such a great point, because it also grounds you, the artist, in your financial reality, so that you can make decisions that Jeffrey's talking about with pricing your work, so you can know where you're moving from and where you're going. When you don't have that financial base beneath you, as much as you're going to groan and moan that you can't stand it, you have no head for numbers, unless you get somebody to help you, because that really gives you your sort of benchmark of what's happening.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, and my whole philosophy is, like, if I can do it, anybody can do it. I don't even use Quicken or anything. I sort of developed a really easy system, and I think that doing that, and I actually like doing my taxes every quarter, because I'm like, hey, look, this is all money. This is all stuff that I have earned with my hard work. So if you look
Claudine,
at that way,
I think you've got
so
the
bad.
Makings of another workshop, my dear. I mean, I would take it. You know, that's something a lot of us really need. Thank you. Great. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Michael, hello there. What's your ideas for today?
Well, from obviously my answers are going to be from a licensing perspective for multiples and marketing, artists marketing their work for products. Either it's for fine art prints or for any kind of product they want to get into licensing. The first thing, which is something that amazes me, is that people don't do their research. And that's the key word, is research, to look at what's selling out there in the marketplace, in stores. A lot of artists produce work, and it may be good originals, it may be good for selling at art festivals, but once you go into the commercial world, the criteria is very, very different. And it's to do with series, it's to do with colors, it's to do with many, many things. So that's the most important aspect of research and look at what's actually selling out there to compare it with what you're doing.
And do you have a second one for us?
Yep, the second one is to do with trends. And this includes many things. It includes colors, it includes the subjects, and the actual treatments. And this is to do with whether they're borders or whether there are other treatments within the... There's a lot of montage work going on now.
A lot of what?
Montage.
Say more.
Like collage.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, where they're doing panels with a border, and then an image that's actually a central image, then with lots of different panels with borders and sort of scroll work and so on.
Okay.
When artists look at what's actually selling out there, they start to see where their work is lacking or where they need to go. Trends is a complicated matter, so I'm going to address that a little bit more in detail next week.
Great, because I already find myself
talk for an hour on trends. So,
right. I'll bet you could, because you're bringing up lots of questions for me, and I'm sure the artists listening are also starting to churn up some questions from what you said.
Right.
Thank you so much, Michael. Alita, hello.
Hello.
So, what have you come up with here?
Well, I'm really amazed. I'm really glad to be part of this, too, to hear all of these. And I'm amazed that we haven't repeated yet.
Yes, Allison was concerned that would happen. And look at this diversity.
So I spent a long time brainstorming, going, okay, how many answers can you have to this? Well, there's this, there's that. I think the two that I wrote down, I'm going to go with, they do pick up a little on some of the others. The first one is present only your best at all times.
Mm.
You're an entrepreneur now, and that means you're in the retail business, well, retail, wholesale, but you're selling now, and that's all involved with detail. So the first suggestion, you've heard Jeffrey say it, and Claudina as well, and Allison, all of people have referred to this, master your art. Finish your work impeccably. Frame it really well. Present it professionally.
Mm.
Thank people for stopping by. All those little extras are the ones that will set you apart from all the artists who don't even notice those details.
That's
our
right.
Clients do. I'm one of them that notices, and I vote with my wallet.
You're right. Right.
So when it comes to your art, express all the passion that you feel until you're satisfied that your work really has an audience and they'll pay for it, because you know that the further down the line you go, the passion gets diluted and other people add stores. So you have to be very, very clear about your work and who you are and how you're going to do it. So when you're doing your art, it's all about your art and what you want. When it comes to making sales, think about the audience more than you think about your art.
Mm.
You're in charge of your art. They're in charge of your sales.
Mm, absolutely. You're echoing Molly yesterday, who touched
Yeah.
on this.
Oh, I wish I'd heard that. Maybe we'll get to hear that
later. Oh, I'll send the recording link
Great.
To you.
Great. Oh, yeah. Number two is present only your best at – no, that was number one. Present only your best at all your times. But when it comes to knowing who you are at every point in the day, that's the same thing. Artists are lucky. Yeah, it's not easy for a dentist to stand in line for anything and start a conversation, but artists can. But you're a different
what a great way to think about it.
Well, I have. I start conversations at the dentist. They're now reviewing art magazines, and I'm starting to, you know, insinuate art everywhere I go, because you mentioned the nesting idea. If you come at everything from the core of the passion for your art and you feed that into everything you do, did you hear Claudine's excitement about doing her taxes? But that's how to do it. It's
right.
Something that will make your passion infuse through everything. And that really will come through to the ultimate person, not just your art, but how you do your business.
Mm. Excellent. Well, Alita, we're going to scoot right into the two-minute challenge, and we're going to pick up with you again. So
yeah.
We're going to start now. Panels, get ready. You got 2 minutes to answer these questions.
Okay.
Alita.
All right, I'm ready.
This is from an artist. These come straight out of the vision statements. I've tweaked them just a bit to make, you know, so that they would work well for everybody. But these came from the core of the group that's listening to us, so they're really on target. This is what this artist wrote me. I get really good reviews from people when they see my work, but cold calls are hard for me to do, and I probably don't do them well. What are some things I should say or not say that would make a lasting impression, that would entice a gallery owner to seriously consider buying?
Okay, that's a packed question. I'm gonna,
isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to unpack that first, and there are, I'll declare some limitations, and because I'm doing this without having seen the work and the context and so on. So bear with me and ask questions if you have any more information. First of all, let's talk about I get really good reviews. If you're getting good reviews, then the first thing to do is use those testimonials to mask your own reticence to talk about what people like about your work. Use them kind of like training wheels. Now, you have to be careful. Again, it has to fit into your whole marketing strategy. I was working with someone yesterday who thought that would be self-serving, and I said, well, that's the idea. number two is, in here, asking people who like your work where they think people might want to see it. I don't know where it's been shown so far, but start using the people that are connecting with you about your work as sources of information. Ask them if they know anybody who buys this kind of work. Ask them if you know them well enough if they would.
Networking.
I have been known to ask my friends what would prevent them from pulling out their wallet to buy it. So you have to build relationships with people, but mine that information so that you find out where to take it. See if they've seen it in galleries where you might be able to attract a similar audience. If you don't do cold calls, if you don't do them well, don't do them. Either learn how to do them or make them into warm calls. So that would be another 2 minutes. So if you have time, I'll come back to that.
Okay.
If you write, have someone edit your work. If you're going to write to contact people right now, just looking at these sentences, they're really long, and you need to be clear with people. So if you want to entice people, be clear about what you're asking them. The next point is making a lasting impression. That comes from so many factors before it comes from what you say or do not say that you really need to go back to the rest. This is kind of the punctuation point when you're talking to these people. You heard people say you got to do your research. You have to have a strong body of signature work that already has an audience outside of your circle. You need to build your exhibition experience and do it in alternative venues if this is your first gallery. You need to make those connections because that's what makes sales and serious buying. Now, I think Jeffrey will probably have, if you have a minute to ask him later, a better answer about the gallery, too, because he's seen one. But I think that from all the gallery dealers that I know, what entices one to seriously buy is that you're going to make a good business partner with them. And that's everything from your art to your mailing list to where you've shown before. How am I doing? I'm not washing my tongue.
No, that's great. No, that's fantastic. And I just want to jump in quickly and say that that whole idea of enticing somebody to buy, that piece, what you're really talking about is the entire, your entire life, reality around your relationship to your art and it as a business.
Absolutely.
So it's not just a one, it's not like you're going to say one thing to a gallery owner and then they're going to buy it from you.
No, that's one of the
It's a really big question, you know.
It's huge. That's why I said there's some limitations
here. I agree with you. Yeah. But I think it's important for us to say that because I think the artists, there is a sense, and I know our culture also fosters this, that if they could just figure out this formula, it would all work.
Well, there is a formula, but it's different for everybody. And that's what, formulas are derived from different situations, and they're different ones for different people. So.
Exactly. They're tailor-made to each artist.
Yeah.
Yep, great. Claudine.
Hi.
Hi. So here's the question that I got for you. Do you have one guiding rule that you follow when it comes to setting up payment for commissions? And how do you get your customers to follow through with payment?
Okay. Let me see if I understand the question correctly, because by one guiding rule that I follow, I'm wondering if that person means, like, what sort of shopping cart I use, or is it the language that I use? So I'll maybe touch on kind of both.
So there again, we have a question that the nature of the question leaves some ambiguity as to how to answer it.
Yeah, a little bit. So.
Right, which comes back to what Alita was saying about making sure that you're being clear. Because I can see where this would be a little confusing. My take on it was almost like, how do you set up payment for commissions? I was wondering if they were thinking about a contract beforehand. That's what I was wondering.
Okay, let me touch on that.
Okay.
What I do for my commissioned artwork is I have sort of a two-tier system. I have one level where it's a very inexpensive piece of artwork that they can commission from me, and that just requires a one-time payment of $75, and I'll make the work. And I don't begin the work until the payment is in. Mm-hmm. And I make that pretty clear on my website without being, rude about it. You know, I just say,
sure.
You have to pay first. And then the other tier system is a little bit more involved works of art, and what I ask for up front is a deposit payment of half the amount. And I also say in there that that no work is begun until all of the payment, and also they have to send me materials because I use their photos and items in my artwork. So I let them know that they won't get on my commission calendar until all of their payment and photos and elements are into me. And that lets them know that they have to pay or else I'm not going to start on it.
Uh-huh.
And by having the deposit be half the amount, I've never, knock on wood, I've never had problems with somebody then when the artwork is completed paying me the rest of the amount. And I don't ship the artwork until payment in full has been made. And I've never had a problem with that. Everybody seems to understand the system pretty well. And there is a steps of on the higher price commissions where they do pay the deposit. I have steps for approval of the artwork. So there is a review phase. And so it's really a collaboration between me and the person that is commissioning the work. So by the time I finish the work, we all know that they are happy with it, and I email them a JPEG so that they can see what it looks like before they make the final payment. So they have a really good idea what they're getting before it even gets to them.
Right. So after that last part, how do you get your customers to follow through with payment? You do that by creating a system where there's really no other thing that's going to happen. You sort of guarantee the payment by the system you set up.
Exactly. If they want the artwork, they really they have to, or, you know, if they decide, I've never had this happen ever, but if they decided that they didn't like the artwork, I mean, I would just do whatever I could to make them like it, make the adjustments and changes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So really, there's no having to wrestle with the client to get them to pay me because if they want the artwork, they need to submit the payment.
Right.
And as far as the payment methods that I use, I don't have a real shopping cart on my website at this time. What I use is PayPal, and I'm sure many people are familiar with PayPal.com, and it's a great way for people to be able to use their credit cards to send you money, and you don't have to set up an entire merchant account. And then I also accept personal checks, which they can mail to me, and that works pretty easy because some people aren't comfortable paying over the internet, so you want to have both options.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you, Claudine. Those are fantastic. Listen, I just want to remind anybody who's maybe popped in a little late that you are on the call for the Smartest Telesummit 2007, Day 2, second panel discussion on getting paid for your art. And now we have Jeffrey. Jeffrey, this is a little bit of a long one, but it just seemed interesting to me. She wrote, I was in a gallery where the owner seemed to really want one of my pieces, but in the end did not buy. I spent almost 2 hours with her talking about my process, getting to know her, asking her questions. And then she said, let me think about it, come back after lunch. When I came back, she was caught up in her business, on the phone, solving problems, etc. How do you suggest that I proceed in a situation like this, should it occur again? How can I make a lasting impression without overdoing it? What a great question, huh?
It's a great question, and it kind of hits the gallery world on the head. Unfortunately, gallery dealers come in every shape and size, and they're not consistent business people, so sometimes what they say is not actually what they're going to do.
Uh-huh.
Interesting question. Now, first of all, just to clarify a little bit, most gallery dealers are not buying the artwork directly from the artist. Most gallery dealers are looking to consign the artwork. Now, maybe this was the case where the gallery dealer was purchasing.
Uh-huh.
What happens is this artist now has been turned into a salesperson, right? So what we're all talking about in sales is we're asking our clients for permission to do what we want them to do. So what I would have said first off, two 2 hours is a long time with a gallery dealer. I would give this a little thought the next time around and think, if you have that long, what do you want to get done? Do you want to close the sale? Do you want it to start the relationship? Do you want it to be a continuing relationship? We have to give a lot of these relationships thought before we even get involved with them. You know, working with gallery dealers, it can be 5 minutes or it can be 5 hours. You never know how they're going to open up with you. So first of all, give this a lot of thought of what you want to visualize happening at the end of this meeting. Is it a sale? Is it that they start handling your work? Is it that it's a long-term relationship? So think before you go in there what you want the outcome of that relationship to be. Now, so she's done, this person has had the introduction, they've had the meeting. So there are kind of three steps to this, I would say. Number one is you have the meeting, the introduction. Number two is you're going to ask their permission to follow up. So at the end of 2 hours, now, what happens if I come back this afternoon and you're busy? Where should we go from there? When should we set up our next meeting? Salespeople know that when you get their permission, it's like a green light or a red flag. I mean, you just go for it. So,
right,
so
right.
You've got to make sure and follow up and tell the people what you want them to do. Mm. Now, the other thing to do is really, really important.
Wait, Jeffrey, hang on a second. I want to back you up just real quick. When you say tell the people what you want them to do, can you give us an example?
Well, you might say something like, I want to have a show here.
Okay. So be, again, specific.
I want you to be my long-term representative. Again, most gallery dealers don't buy the artwork.
Right.
Okay, they're looking to start a relationship with the artist. If you want to clarify, galleries handle artists' work in a lot of different ways, from, say, taking one or two pieces on and just giving it a try, to bringing in a whole body of work, or to maybe possibly saying to them, you know, 2 months from now, it opened up, there's a show available, could you do it? So think about this ahead of time. What's the best case scenario? What's the medium case? What's the worst case scenario? So that when it happens, you're prepared with the answer or how to do it, how to deal with it.
Okay.
Now, the other thing is, how do you leave with a lasting impression? Don't forget that we're talking about people that spend a lot of time on the telephone and they're being bombarded by artists. What I would say is that your marketing material has to be really, really impressive. One thing I'm doing with a lot of my clients is we're creating these digital online catalogs that are very, very inexpensive. They're $5 to $10 to have 15 images, your resume, et cetera. Leave them with a book like that. Now, the other thing is, obviously, and Allison, first thing she said, so important, mailing list, keep in touch with them afterwards. Now, the first meeting you have with someone, it may not be the one that is just so fantastic, I can't believe it. It may be the one where you all start developing that relationship so that sometime in the future, things like purchasing a piece or having a show can happen. So you've got your introduction, then you're going to leave your marketing material, and then the follow-up. And I think often artists are worse at the follow-up, whether it's a thank you note, whether it's – don't forget, you're always looking for excuses to stay in front of your art audience. So, you know, whether it's the next show where you put them on the mailing list or you want a grant or you're in a juried show or you're having a show in a tea house, you're looking for an excuse to go back to that gallery dealer and say, hey, look, this is going on.
Right. So, yes, and I'm really glad you're giving examples of that, because I was thinking earlier, I'm trying to think of who mentioned this whole thing of mailing lists and legitimate ways to stay, you know, it's Allison, yes, we're bombarded. This is absolutely true. But when there's a legitimate link or bridge to the follow-up, then it's not bombardment anymore. It's connection.
Exactly. And what that does with my clients is it challenges them to be very active. Artists, in other words, I believe they should be updating their resume at least every 3 months with an activity that warrants updating the resume. So I'm putting a lot of pressure on my clients to really be out there, because bottom line is we're trying to create a buzz about us is what we're trying to do.
Right, right. Excellent. All right. Allison, here's one for you, my dear.
Okay.
I am confronted with a limited amount of time for my art business. I do not have a workable plan that will transition me from part-time artist to full-time artist. What are some beginning steps I can take to set up this transition? Oh, boy, that one really resonated with me when I read that. I hear that so many times from artists.
Yeah, it's one of the questions that I ask of when people subscribe to my newsletters is, what's your biggest obstacle that you face in your career? And over again, it's time. So you're not alone. And also keep in mind that other business people face the same problem. No one has enough time. So just if you can get past that, that time isn't your enemy and that you're never going to have more time, then you can try to play some games with it. So I guess how I want to answer that is in some time management and kind of routines and habits, tricks, let's say. And I do this a lot with my clients because they're tackling the same issues. The first thing I ask them to do is to write down everything they need to do, everything they're responsible for, whether it's taking the kids to school, priming a canvas, having their work photographed, whatever it is, write down everything they're responsible for. Then write down everything that they're doing that they could farm out or hire to someone else. Doesn't mean they have to do that right now. It doesn't mean they have to start worrying about where they're going to come up with the money. But who can stretch your stretchers, mat and frame your work, photograph your work, mow your lawn, clean your house? And don't forget your other family members who may or may not be helping out as much as they should be. And then for 1 week, keep track of how you spend your time. Mm. Keep a diary. Okay, I did this, I watched TV for 7 hours, which is the average time that people watch TV. And then take an hour or 7 hours a day.
A
day is the average American.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's amazing to me.
I know. And so take an hour or so to analyze how you're spending your time and decide where you're flexible and where you're not and figure out where you're wasting your time. Mm. The other thing, and I'm just going through these really fast and you can
talk
about them in the end. Ask if you work better in smaller amounts of time or larger blocks of time.
Mm.
For some things, for being in the studio, you want larger blocks of time, or maybe you're having a hard time and you maybe just want to commit to 30 minutes at a time and then allow yourself more time to go from there. And then there's other things like you can't stand to sit in front of the computer for more than half an hour, so you only want to devote that much time to your database at a time. So figure out where you can put those big blocks of time and small blocks of time in
your
schedule.
Really creating a fit with knowing yourself and your personality, what works better for you, and putting and matching those up.
Right, and you have to, I think you really have to take time to look and see how you're spending your time to figure out where you waste your time. And then one thing that I think is really, really important, because I know a lot of artists are transitioning to full-time artists or, really trying to become more and more serious about their work, have a heart-to-heart talk with your family. Tell them what you hope to accomplish, what your goals and dreams are, and ask for their support. I think that a lot of artists are lacking in that support, and it's so critical, because if you don't set those boundaries with yourself and with your family, like, family, I'm not going to be available for this time. We have to be in the studio at this time. They're going to take as much from you as they can get. And your friends will do this too. So let people know of your intentions, and they will support you for the most part.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And may I add just a little caveat to that?
Yeah, please.
I'm thinking about a lot of my women clients, I notice this over and over, have a tremendous issue with feeling guilty about not taking care of their families. And my thought always is, but if you're taking care of yourself with your art, doesn't that give you energy that literally comes off your body that translates to your family a different level of relationship to the world and to life around joy and creating and what you love? Therefore, they will have permission to do that as they grow.
Right. Well, and you can't take care of someone else before you take care of yourself. It's kind of like when you're on an airplane and they tell you to put the mask over your face before you give it to your child. You have to have that oxygen before you can take care of someone else. And I think, you know, I just think those boundaries. I mean, I know so many artists who say, well, I'm going to have my, you know, they've been showing and selling their work, but none of their friends and their family might, but none of their friends know they're an artist. So you haven't, it's kind of been this underground life. And when you're kind of, you know, emerging, that's really important to share your dreams with people, because the people who know you, and I will say they must, and who like you, the people who know you and like you will want to support you, because everyone loves to support an artist.
I think that's true, because I think it brings out for that person the whole idea of supporting that creative energy that they themselves, I'm sure, have at some level.
Right, right.
Thank you, Allison. That's fantastic. Great.